Good evening and welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Bishnu Shom. The big topic today, on a day when the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi has been in India, comes news, very significant, that China may be willing to listen to India's requirements for rare earths. These are critical minerals which China has a global monopoly over. The big question is, does this acceptance and perhaps the need or the acceptance of China to actually provide this to India in larger quantities signify a dramatic change in the relationship which has been soured since the 2019 Galwan crisis? Now, what exactly are rare earths and why are we talking about this? These are a subset of critical minerals with wide applications in many emerging technologies. During the last three decades, there's been an explosion in the applications of rare earth and their alloys in several technology devices. Electronics, TV screens, commuters, cell phones, LED, manufacturing, high-strength magnets, stress gauges, automotive catalytic converters, medical science, portable X-ray machines, MRI, cancer treatment. This is all critical. It all needs rare earths. Renewable energy. This is critical for India with hybrid automobiles, with wind turbines, next generation rechargeable batteries as well. Technology areas like lasers, high-temperature superconductors, and computer memory. So why China? Because China dominates rare earth mining and refining by controlling approximately 69% of global rare earth production and 90% of global refining capacity as of 2023. This is also very significant, the Chinese indicator. Why? Because it comes at a time when the U.S. has imposed sanctions and tariffs 50% on India, which includes 25% for India's continued import of Russian oil. So are global dynamics changing? We're joined by Jeffrey Pyatt, the former Assistant Secretary of State in the United States for Energy Resources. Thanks very much for being with us. And in a little while from now, I'll be joined by Sean Rain, Managing Director of the China Market Research Group, Andrew Leung. He's an international and independent China strategist, and Ambassador Bhashwati Mukherjee. But Jeffrey Pyatt, let me come to you first. In a sense, with this 50% tariff burden imposed on India by the United States, has China, in a sense, filled a vacuum with the Chinese foreign minister over here saying, you need rare earths, that's fine, New Delhi, we might be in a position to provide you more of that?
So I think nothing fundamental has changed about either of our country's strategic interests vis-a-vis China. It's going to be a complicated relationship for decades to come because of China's alternative vision of how the international system should be organized. You talked about all the areas where rare earth materials have technology applications, but you left out one critical category, which is defense.
Yes, of course.
High-tech applications, things like advanced fighter jets, advanced sensors, all of these require as well these permanent magnets. That's why the Trump administration has put a major focus on diversifying our supply chains. And frankly, this is yet another illustration of how the strategic interests of India and the United States converge. It's why it's so important that we work our way through as quickly as possible to resolve the current trade impasse.
Mr. Pyatt, it's interesting because just last month, President Trump had also spoken to the China and appears to have secured or is in the process of securing a rare earths deal yourself. However, the United States has not imposed any sanctions on China for their continued import of Russian oil, but it's impacted India. So A, there are double standards when it comes to oil, and B, if China and America get into an agreement on rare earths and India and China gets into an agreement on rare earths, then, you know, that collective sense of concern that both sides had vis-a-vis China, that needs to perhaps be looked at in a new way. I mean, I would suggest that. What are your thoughts?
So I think both India and the United States are well served by finding ways to reduce China's ability to weaponize its market dominance. So, of course, let's reach agreements with Beijing in order to stop the Chinese government's current effort to restrict these technologies, which are so important to both of our economies. But equally important, we have to continue the work that began in the Biden administration so that both India and the United States do not find themselves again in the future in a situation where China is able to cut off supplies in a manner that endangers both our civilian economy, sectors you described, like autos and medical technologies, but also critical defense applications. We should have no illusions about the long-term strategic challenge that China poses to both of our countries, and that has been one of the informing factors in the transformation of the relationship for over two decades now.
And Mr. Pyatt, it's one that I have as a journalist and now as an editor tracked very closely from a situation where India and America just didn't trust each other to having these foundational agreements which really define our relationship. But it really does need to be said that in the last couple of weeks, with the United States imposing 50% sanctions on New Delhi, people over here have no idea which way to look. And they don't know whether the basis or the premise of that relationship, which is trust, has been eroded in a manner in which it needs time to be fixed. What are your thoughts?
So I agree with you completely that there's been significant damage done to the underlying foundation of trust that has enabled us to make progress in this relationship through multiple governments from multiple political parties in both Delhi and Washington. That needs to be resolved as quickly as possible. We have a compelling strategic interest on both sides in finding a way forward on the trade account. For the United States, the Trump administration's overarching strategic goal is to reduce our dependency on China, to de-risk our dependency on key strategic imports from China. You can't have success in that strategy without a strong and confident relationship between Delhi and Washington.
Mr. Pyatt, India continues to import Russian weaponry. America has all sorts of problems with that. But from New Delhi's standpoint, the import of Russian weaponry is premised on India's strategic autonomy. Now, that's something which many in America continue to have a problem with. But that's another area, right, like the import of oil, which is also India's strategic autonomy, which New Delhi is unlikely to back down on. Do you see this as a hindrance or a problem or a roadblock in the relationship from where we are?
So I think the solution to that is India's own strategic interests. You've seen the record of performance of U.S. defense and military technology vis-a-vis the Russian alternative on the Ukraine battlefield for over 3 years now. And I think the Indian Armed Forces as well understands the tremendous capacity of American defense primes on everything from sensors to advanced fighters to increasingly networked warfare. I view the Russia-India defense relationship as largely a legacy, a hangover, if you will, of the Cold War days. But there is no comparison whatsoever between the kind of technology offering and the partnership that's emerging between U.S. defense contractors working in India with private sector and state enterprises and what Russia offers with legacy Soviet technology. So I think there are a few specific lacuna that have to be addressed. Things like the S-400 and the concerns about some of the technology leakage there. But over the long term, I come back to the strategic interest in the United States and in India in charting our partnership going forward, recognizing that India is not going to sacrifice its strategic autonomy, but that the best way for India to strengthen its own security and its defense capabilities is exactly what we've been doing over the past several decades. And certainly, if you look at how Russia and China have, in fact, tightened their security embrace in the course of the war in Ukraine, that argues, in my mind, for even more caution from New Delhi in thinking about its defense relationship with the Russian Federation.
All right, Mr. Pyatt, great speaking to you. Just one small point of disagreement. The S-400, which you alluded to, a Russian system, has done tremendously well for India in just the last couple of months against Pakistan, you know, in downing several aircraft and the like. But that's a separate conversation. I take the larger point that you're raising. Thanks very much, sir, for sharing, your views on this. Where does India stand with China? We continue to ask this question in light of Wang Yi's presence, the Chinese foreign minister's presence over here. And remember, Prime Minister Modi will, in a couple of weeks, be in China, in Tianjin, for the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting, his first visit to China in 7 years. Joining us now are Sean Rain, Managing Director of China Market Research Group, and Ambassador Mahashwati Mukherjee. Ambassador Mukherjee, let me come to you first. Ma'am, it appears that the ghosts of Galwan may be vanishing if India and China are talking in the manner that we were perhaps 7-8 years back, where the Chinese foreign minister on our soil seems to suggest that, you know, you want tunneling equipment, which we are very good at, that's something we'll consider. You want rare earths, that's something we will consider as well. Does this mark a strategic realignment, a change? How would you characterize it?
Vishnu, I heard very carefully your conversation with our American guest. And one of the issues which I think our American guest did not understand, perhaps, is that a nation of 1.4 billion people, if it is an important strategic partner of the United States, those people must feel the confidence that relationship is based on sovereign equality. In other words, we cannot be bullied, humiliated publicly, and kicked around, and then told that, no, you should not do business with China, you should not go to Russia, etc., because we are much better than them, and we can give you a better deal. How? By imposing 50% tariffs and destroying half our economy. So I think that's the first point I'd like to begin with. And to say that in the last few weeks, the damage that has been done at the people-to-people level in India, all over India, on the rapid buildup of anti-Americanism is something which, as you yourself said as a journalist, you have carefully seen how that relationship was nurtured for decades. So have I. That has been deeply damaged. Under those circumstances, India is falling back on its strategic autonomy. China and India are two great civilizations with common history and culture going back millennia. If we are able to, as you rightly point out, put the ghosts of Galwan behind us and to build up what we were doing in the past. In the past, we were building the Sino-Indian relationship on all the fronts which are possible and doable, like, for instance, people-to-people, trade, visas, tourism, etc., and trying to settle the boundary issue separately through talks. That is what we have been doing until Galwan happened. If we can go back to that, and if in the process we can get from our Chinese colleagues assurances of rare earths and a few other things that we are in need of, some issues relating to our pharma, where we need some stuff from China, which had been delayed a bit. If those things can be sorted out, we can go back to a much more normal relationship, because we do belong, like China, to groupings that the American president considers are hostile to him, which they are not actually. That includes BRICS, and that includes the SCO. Sure. These are groupings to which India naturally belongs, just like India belongs to Quad.
Okay, Ambassador Mukherjee, one sec. I take your point. Sean Rain, are you optimistic about the India-China relationship going forward? There has been such intense animosity right till a couple of weeks back, I would suggest. Do you believe that this is the beginning of a new start?
Well, yes, I do believe it's the beginning of a new start, because India should become a global superpower. As the world's most populous nation, as a country that's been growing 5-7% annually economically for the last decade, India should take its rightful place as a superpower in the world. However, let me be very clear to my Indian friends, that will never happen if the United States continues to dominate and treat India like a vassal. Your previous American guest basically looked like he was trying to replace British colonialism with American imperialism, and was looking like it was 1990s. We have the best weapons in the world, he says. We can slap 50% tariffs on India, impoverishing hundreds of millions of Indians, because Trump wants to exert pressure on India. Let's be very clear to India. The United States doesn't like strong countries. It kept Japan down in the 1980s with the Plaza Accords after Japan grew strong with exports and innovation. The United States under Trump and Biden both tried to contain China. They have not been able to do so, but they've tried with crippling export controls, sanctions, and tariffs. India is going to be next in line as it continues to get powerful. So what should India do? India should move closer to China. How great would it be if you started to have direct flights between the two nations again? How great would it be if Modi gets rid of the stupid banning of TikTok and dozens of other Chinese apps? These two countries border each other. They have over 2 billion people. Imagine the economic strength if these two countries can forget fighting over some stupid rocks. The previous guest also said there is a lot of animosity between China and India. Kind of, I disagree on that. The animosity is more from India's side towards China's side. China, I think, clearly wants to have good relations with India. They've been begging for direct flights again. They've been saying, let's have economic cooperation again. So I think it's key for Modi, when he goes to Tianjin next week for the SCIO meetings, that he comes forward and meets with Xi Jinping and says, these are the 5 things India needs. We need to have more access to rare earths. We need to have more access to tunneling machines. We need more access to whatever it is that India wants, because I think this is the best time that China is going to give olive branches to India. And again, strategically, India needs to understand it can get close to China, but it can never be and become a superpower, but it can never become anything more than a vassal to the United States.
Okay. All right. Spoken passionately. Ambassador Mukherjee, there are those, including me, who view China with a great deal of suspicion. I'll be honest. We've all believed in the promise of India-China, and we've seen what's happened along our frontiers. Whether it's the salami slicing of territory across the Himalayan frontier or elsewhere, I don't want to divert this onto Galwan and eastern Ladakh Aksai Chin. I don't want to do that. But there are so many in India who do continue to view China from that prism, the military association between China and Pakistan, the real-time sharing of military information during Op-Sindoor as well. Therefore, are we not getting ahead of ourselves in befriending China too soon?
No, I think I would agree with our Chinese colleague here, and I would like to compliment him on his excellent English, that our American colleague actually talked down to us when he spoke to you. He talked down to us like a new American imperialist, because he didn't seem to understand that the world's largest democracy and the world's oldest democracy are natural partners. But a country that has been colonized, like China, for 188 years by the white colonialists, is not going to take public humiliation and bullying, and its people will not take it. So if they continue with bullying in this manner, there will be an automatic shift, especially among Indian people, towards Russia, first of all, which has been a tried and tested friend, and towards China, where we can work out our territorial disputes. There is no doubt that there has been more than a dispute over mere rocks. I would tell our Chinese colleague, Akshay Chin is not mere rock. Salami slicing is not mere rock. But there is nothing that cannot be worked out between China and India, because we have a common history, culture and civilization. And one feels very comfortable. I've been to China many times to feel the real warmth coming from my Chinese friends when I go there. And I'm sure it must be the same for Chinese friends when they come to India. There is a natural warmth and affinity that has been spoiled by politics. But what one cannot tolerate, Vishnu, honestly, is that to be told off in this manner that, you know, we have the best. S-400 is what saved us in Operation Sindhu. Their fighter aircraft, one aircraft is $1 billion. Why should we do that when we can get much better stuff from the Russian Federation? Why should we change our tried and tested Russian friends and abandon them just because the Americans don't want us to buy from them? But they buy from the Russians too. Their imports from Russia have gone up by 25%. In other words, Vishnu, to remain America's strategic ally as India, we have to agree to double standards and to be their vassal, as our Chinese colleague says. I don't think that would be acceptable to India at all. So I think that if this is the way they want to proceed, unless they change their policy, anything is possible with such a volatile president. If they continue with their present policy, they are actually destroying decades of hard work put in on both sides to build up the strategic partnership.
All right. Sean Rain, last word to you. How would you respond to those who say that India's relationship with America or the world order itself will settle down after another 2 years when Trump is gone?
Well, first of all, we don't know if Trump is actually going to step down. I mean, he's joked about staying on longer. I think anything goes when you're dealing with someone with so much narcissism. But I think after Trump, you know, who's going to be the next president if he does step down? Would it be Marco Rubio? Would it be J.D. Vance? Would it be somebody on the Democratic side? I think it would behoove and be smart for India to continue to try to have good relations with the United States, but very clearly they need to get better relations with China. There is nothing in my mind that can't be negotiated, that can't be discussed between China and India to have strong relations between the two countries. And I think what's also really important is, let's be honest, China's economy is still growing, you know, about 5% this year, but it's still weak right now. Retail sales last month were only up 3.7%. Chinese companies can't invest in Europe. They can't invest in America because of Sinophobia and fears over national security issues. So Chinese companies are looking to invest into other markets. And I think India is the absolute best place for Chinese companies to be investing. So again, this is why I think Modi has the real opportunity, because he's got a little bit of leverage over China with the wide 1.4 billion population in India. He's got a little bit of opportunity because China feels boxed in and contained by the Western imperialists. It's really a good time for the two countries to come together and try to forge stronger economic cooperation. Because like your previous guest said, there's nothing too big of an issue between India and China that can't be discussed and have all the problems ironed out for a win-win with both countries. Okay. I'm quite optimistic about the relations with the two countries if Modi becomes a little bit more pragmatic.
All right, well, we'll see where this relationship goes. I think that visit to Tianjin, one of the most important that we've seen in recent times. I'd like to thank you both very much for being with us. The big change in India-China relations, is that really going to take place? Are we going to see a new, different equation, one that buries the ghost of Galwan? We're going to have to wait and see. But for the moment, international relations are in a state of intense churn, courtesy Donald Trump. Where does that leave India? There's so much more to report on that, and we'll keep doing that. For the moment, this short break.